This is a presentation of the Fresno Clovis Prayer Breakfast featuring Dr. Tony Evans. It was recorded on February 19th, 2019. For more information, visit FresnoClovisPrayerBreakfast.com.
Good evening, Fresno and Clovis. I am honored, privileged, that's right, this is morning, I'm sorry. Honored and privileged to be here today. I am delighted that this is a awesome crowd today. Now, you kind of need to know how I got to be the speaker this year. There's a committee that gathers. They gather to decide who the speaker's going to be. And so the committee said that, you know, we want this year to be the biggest and the best that we've ever had here in Fresno. We want it to be just, we want it to just blow the walls out. And so the question was, who do you recommend? And so they went around the circle. The first person on the committee said, well, you know, this is a very astute area. And what we need is an orator. Somebody who can move serendipitously through the English language with such verbal vicissitudes that their ability to meander through adverbial clauses and prepositional phrases can be done with such oratorical finesse that when they have finished articulating their particular nuances of the inclinations that would be resonating in the minds of those who heard, they would be so inspired to respond effectively to the message given. They invited him, but he couldn't make it. So the second person said, well, you know, this is like the Bible Belt of California. And so we need somebody who's biblically accurate, whose knowledge of ecclesiology, pneumatology, anthropology, hamartiology, and eschatology, whose ability to move from Genesis through the antediluvian age, through the revelatory ones, to take us through Revelations with such exegetical, expositional, and theological finesse can be done to exactly expand our biblical understanding in our community. But he couldn't make it either. A third person on the committee said, well, you know, let's get a name. Somebody that we say, this is going to be the speaker. I mean, everybody's going to come from the Fresno Clovis area. Everybody's going to come and they'll be excited to be here. Same thing happened. Now, that's when my good friend Steve spoke up. He said, wait a minute. We could not get the orator. We could not get the theological intellect. We could not get the great name. But I know a good looking speaker. He couldn't make it either. So finally, they invited me. I just couldn't turn them down 5 times in a row. So I'm delighted for the privilege of being with you today. I'm just kidding. I got a call from Steve Dick. He said, Tony, do you believe in free speech? I said, yes. He said, come give one. So that's kind of I am humbled that you have allowed me to be part of this community. My fourth time being in this area, my second time at this event, I'm really humbled by this. Now, I'm from Texas, and Texas is not known to be here. Everything's big in Texas. I'm from Texas, but I want you to know I am humbled by this invitation, by this crowd, and by the purpose for which you gather. Because pride comes before the fall, you know. It's a big farming community, and I don't want to be like the Texas rancher who used to love to brag about how big his ranch was. In fact, he loved to brag so much he could create braggadocious opportunities. And so he happened to be in Europe one day, and he ran across a European farmer. He thought this would be a great opportunity to brag, and so he asked the European farmer how big his farm was. The European farmer said, oh, we just have about 25 acres, but he knew that would make the European farmer ask him how big his ranch was. course, that's what the European bomber did. I made it your ranch. Texas Ranger said, well, it's like this. I get up before the sun rises. I get in my truck. And by the time the sun has set, I've not reached the end of my property. That's when the European farmer said, yeah, I used to have a truck like that one. So, but in all seriousness, I am honored to be here. We've met some folks who listen to us every day on radio or watch the TV broadcast or who've read one of the books, and it's encouraging to know that we have that spiritual connection. And this is one of them that I get invited to these all over the country, and this is one of the largest ones that I've ever been to, and it's exciting to see your excitement to gather together for prayer. Many years ago, in Europe, there was a crude way of determining someone who was in a sanatorium, whether they were ready to be released, whether they had gotten sane enough to be let out of the sanatorium into the general population. One of the crude ways that they would do that way back in the day in Europe is they would put the inmate in a closet, a janitor's closet. They would put a stopper in the sink and turn on the water and let the water overflow the sink. They would give the inmate a mop and tell him or her to mop up the mess. So they would put him in a closet, put a stopper in the sink, turn the water on, let it overflow, give the inmate a mop and say, clean up the mess. The supervisor would then leave for 2 or 3 minutes, come back. When the supervisor came back, if the water was still running, the stopper was still in the sink, and they were still mopping, they knew they weren't ready to be released because they were not able to ascertain the root of the problem. They were unable to figure out that until you address the stopper, you will forever be trying to mop up. There are a lot of messes that need to be mopped up today in our world, in our homes, and in our culture. And we are slinging a lot of mops. We are slinging political mops. We're slinging cultural mops. We're slinging racial mops. We are slinging legislative mops. We are slinging economic mops. And all of those are being used to mop up the mess. But if you will allow me in my moments with you today to talk to you about the stopper. Because you see, if we can get to the root of what is creating the mess, maybe we won't have to spend as much time slinging mops. Maybe we'll not have to spend as much time trying to mop up a mess rather than remove the cause of it in the first place. That's why I want to quote a few verses for you right now from 2 Chronicles chapter 15, verses 3 to 6. It says, in those days there was no true God, no teaching priest, and no law. Verse 5 says, there was no peace to him who went in to his home or him who came out of his home. It then goes on to say, city rose up against city and nation rose up against nation. For God troubled them with every kind of distress. What you have in those verses is a picture of cultural chaos. It says there was no peace to individuals. Individuals were in conflict with themselves. And when you're in conflict with yourself, you will by nature be in conflict with other people. And so it says there was no peace to the individual when they left home, and they were in conflict when they went back home. When you look at the family decimation that is occurring in our culture, when you look at the divorce rate, when you look at the abuse rate, when you look at the neglect rate, when you look at the redefinition rate of the family, there is no peace to him who comes out of the him who goes back in. It says city rose up against city. There was urban conflict. When you look at the racial strife in our communities, the cultural clashes, the immigration confusion, it says there was urban conflict that was unresolved. And then it says there was international conflict. Nation rose up against nation. And a simple scurrying the news. Every day we're given new notice about catastrophe worldwide. But what ought to capture your attention about those verses is the end of verse 6. Because the end of verse 6 says, for God troubled them with every kind of distress. Now, I would have thought that would have read with all the chaos that it describes. The devil troubled them with every kind of distress. Demons troubled them with every kind of distress. That's not what it says. It says God troubled them with every kind of distress. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if God is your problem, it doesn't matter who you elect. If God is your problem, it doesn't matter what legislation you pass. If God is your problem, it doesn't matter what programs you fund. If God is your problem, it doesn't matter what strategies you come up with. You see, if God is your problem, only God is your cure. If God is the cause, only God is the one who can change it. To put it another way, the closer God is to a life, a family, a city, a community, or a nation, the more order the individual, the family, the city, the community, and the nation will be. The further God is from an individual, a family, a community, a city, or a nation, the more chaotic it will become. So while we are swinging mops all over our culture, we have not satisfied the stopper issue. What you and I are experiencing in the United States of America is what we might call the passive wrath of God. In the Old Testament, there's the active wrath of God. You see fire coming from heaven. You see a worldwide flood. You see the earth opening up. The active wrath of God. But with the death of Jesus Christ, God's relationship to the world shifted. 1 Corinthians 5 says, with the death of Christ, the world was reconciled to God. So now we do not experience the active wrath of God. We experience the passive wrath of God. Now that is described for us in Romans chapter 1, verse 24, 26, and 28, which says, because they did not retain the knowledge of God, God turned them over, verse 24 says. Verse 26 says, God turned them over. Verse 28 says, for God turned them over. In other words, he released them to life without him. When God releases you to life without him because you choose not to be identified with him, then that gap of the distance between the creation and the creator is filled with evil. And so Romans 1 begins to describe the devolution of a society, the devolution of a nation, the devolution of a citizenry when God is no longer on the front page and front and center in the culture. We are suffering today from a case of, well, what should I call it? Spiritual AIDS. AIDS is a breakdown in the immune system. AIDS doesn't kill you, it just sets you up for something else to do you in. You become more susceptible to cancer. You become more susceptible to pneumonia. What we have today in our culture and in our country is an immune system problem. So that cultural colds have become societal pneumonia because the spiritual has been put on the sideline. It says, there was no true God. My wife asked me some time ago to go to Walmart to pick up some things for her, and you need to understand, I hate anything with Mark in its name. If Mark is in its name, I kind of from it because I don't like going into those big stores. But she had some other things to do. And she said, would you go and get these from Walmart? So I wanted to be the first one in. I wanted to be the first one out. And so I wanted to be there when the doors opened. But when I arrived at our local Walmart, the rest of Dallas had beaten me there. The parking lot was jammed filled with cars. And I'm trying to figure out, why are all these people here so early? I walked in, I got my goods, I stood in this long line, and then I discovered why they were there early. They were there early because this Walmart was having a store-wide sale. Everything was on discount. It dawned on me. That's our problem. Everybody wants God, they just want him on discount. Everybody wants God, they just want him on sale. And as long as they can get God cheaply, they'll buy all the God they can get. But the moment he comes at full price, they'll shop elsewhere. So what we are dealing with today is the dumbing down of the deity. The dumbing down of God. Now, he's good for invocations. He's great for benedictions as long as he stays out of the data in between. We will use him for convenience. We will not use him for who he is, what he declares, and what he expects. And as a result of the diminishing of God, the chaos sets in to a people, a family, a citizenry, and even a nation. It says there was no longer the true God. Now, it did not say there was no longer the mention of God, but what the people were talking about and who God is, when it was not the same thing. It was God in the making of the society. We call that idolatry. Idolatry is any noun, person, place, thing, or thought that you look to as your source. An idol is any person, place, thing, or thought, any noun, that you look to as your source. Now, we do not worship rocks and stones and trees as perhaps some tribal group might. We have, American idols. We have sophisticated idols. For example, we have the idol of race. Whenever you promote your birth, color, or culture, and you deify it so that it trumps everything else, you have created an idol and it has become your God. In fact, it is illegitimate to say, if you're a Christian, I'm a black Christian or a white Christian, because then you make black and white an adjective, you make Christian a noun. The job of the adjective is to modify the noun. So if you get your color in the adjectival position and your faith in the noun position, you got to keep changing the noun of your faith to do the adjective of your color or culture. Your faith must always be in the adjectival position, your humanity in the noun position, so that if anything changes, it's the noun of your humanity and not the adjective of your faith. Because if you do that, what you have done is you have placed your culture in its right level. Politics has become a god in our culture. Now, God created politics. God created government. Romans 13, it says, to all the political leaders, you ought to be servants of God before servants of men. But today, what we have done is we've elevated politics to the point of deity. I'd like to clarify something, and that is, God does not ride the backs of donkeys or elephants. He does not go on rides like that. He supersedes out of Joshua chapter 5. Joshua comes out and he's dressed in battle array, and he's going around the walls of Jericho doing some analysis, and he sees this guy dressed in battle array. He says, whose side are you on? Are you on our side or are you on Jericho's side? He said, I'm neither on your side nor am I on their side. I'm captain of the Lord's army. I ain't come to take sides, I come to take over. You have to understand that God wants to set the agenda for your life, your family. He wants to set the agenda for a nation. And unless he sets the agenda, it's not the true God. It is the God in the making of the culture, even though you still may use his name. Now, he says the problem was there was no teaching priest. People were not being reinforced with a biblical worldview. A cultural worldview had replaced a biblical worldview so that people were leaning to their own understanding. If you came to me and your life was falling apart, I would take the Bible, I would give you what God says about what is causing the pain in your life, then I would give you practical things to do to fix the problem that was described by God for your situation. If you came to me with your family and said, my family is falling apart, I would take the same Bible that I use with the individual. I would show you what God has to say about the causes and cures of your family disintegration. I would give you practical steps to apply those solutions to your situation. If you were a church and you said, our church is falling apart, I would use the same Bible I use for the individual, the same Bible I use for the family. I would sit down with the pastor and the leaders, give you the biblical solutions to the causes and cures of whatever is causing the chaos in that ministry, give you practical steps to take to bring about some solutions. What would I do if the Congress came to me and said, our nation is falling apart? I wouldn't change books. I would use the same book I use for the individual, the same book I use for the family, and the same book I use for the church, and show what God says our nation is going should be governed, what God says a leader is supposed to do, what God says civil servants are supposed to act, what God says about the laws that are made, because the Bible speaks about all of these subjects, and I would show you what the causes and cures of a nation's decline is, and practical steps to implement those principles in the life of a nation. But what we have done conveniently in our culture is change books. And when you change books, you change gods. If you and I want to see the saving of a culture, a city, or a community, or a life, we must return to the biblical God, and we must let him speak for himself. For God has spoken and he has not stuttered. There are two answers to every question, God's answer and everybody else's, and everybody else's wrong. When you disagree with the deity, then you have to come up with your own solutions, and it ought to be obvious they aren't working. It ought to be obvious. They do not understand, because God is used conveniently, but he's not used for who he is. That's why this gathering matters. This gathering matters because in the name of the true God, not somebody called God, in the name of the God who created us, in the name of the God, the Bible, the Father of the Lord Jesus Christ, you have gathered. And if you will decide not to carry on business as usual, but to bring a divine viewpoint when you lead this gathering into the culture of Fresno and Clovis, then what you will bring is God back into the vicinity. You know, most major cities have loops. These loops go around the city, and they're typically on the margin of the city, close enough to give you access, but far enough that you're not bogged down with downtown traffic. Today we live in a culture with God on the loop, close enough to look respectable, far enough not to be bothered with. We want him in the vicinity when the tires go flat. We'll go and get the spare until we begin rolling again. And then he can go back into the truck until he's needed. The danger of a gathering like this is that it's a gathering like this. You see, the danger of this prayer breakfast is that it's a prayer breakfast, and that you will meet again next year for another prayer breakfast. But if you decide that the prayer breakfast will become a prayer movement, you decide that the prayer breakfast will become how we roll in Fresno and how we roll in Clovis, oh, then you have started a prayer movement, so that by next year this time, you're coming back to celebrate. You're coming back to celebrate all the things that are changing, all the families that are healing, all the gangs that are failing, all the drugs that are being diminished, because the true God has been invited back into the culture, into the environment, and into the society. So what was the solution to the problem that 2 Chronicles 15 enunciated? It stated in verse 4. It says, and in their distress, let me say that again, in their distress, they sought the Lord their God And he let them find him in their distress, the distress that God caused. Verse 6 says God caused the distress in their distress. When it got so bad, the only way they could look was up. So let me explain how the world works. God will let things get bad in your life. He will let things get bad in your home. He will allow things to get havoc in your community. And he will let a nation unravel until it gets so bad that the only way you can look is up. Until it gets so bad that he becomes your only option, because he wants to be your first option. When I met my wife, we were 18 years old, but there was a problem. She was not responding at the rate to which I was accustomed. It's this beautiful young lady, but I wasn't used to somebody responding this slow, so I had to help a sister out. So I'm from Baltimore, Maryland originally, and I took her to an amusement park called Gwin Oaks Amusement Park in Baltimore, Maryland. And in Gwin Oaks Amusement Park back then, they had a roller coaster called the Wild Mouse. It was a roller coaster for two. You got in this little compartment that looked like a mouse, and you did all the roller coaster stuff, but then it would shoot like it was going to jump off the edge and turn real quick. I said, give me two tickets. We got two tickets, we got on the Wild Mouse. The wilder the ride got, the closer she got. By the time the ride was over, you thought only one person got on it. Why did I buy two tickets on the Wild Mouse? Because I had a plan for her. And it was a good plan, but I had to create some distress first. So I created some distress. She's been hanging with me for 50 years now because I created a situation. What God does is he creates a situation. He'll let things get unnerving, panicky, chaotic, disorganized. He will allow the racial strife, the cultural strife, the immigration strife, the political strife. He'll allow all of that to unravel until you draw near. Until you get close, until you recognize he allowed all that to get your undivided attention. So I want to challenge you. Now, this gathering is great, but, you know, I was chaplain for the Cowboys for a long time, and, you know, in football teams, you know, you have a huddle. It's like a huddle in a football team. It's a great gathering, but 100,000 people do not get to watch 11 grown men bend over. They don't gather to look at a huddle. Now, they don't mind a huddle as long as you spend only a few seconds in it. Because what they want to see is what difference will the huddle make. Having huddle, can you now score? What are you going to do about 11 other men on the other side of the ball daring you to go public with your private conversation? This is an awesome huddle, but in a few minutes, we're going to break up. And when we break up and you go back to your homes, your jobs, your political responsibilities, when you go back to the real world and the huddle is over, what Fresno and Clovis needs to see from those who are in the huddle is what difference the huddle will make. That having huddle, we're not ready for the two scores. That having huddle, we're going to override those evil forces that seek to bring havoc, disharmony, and breakdown in our community. So what we're going to need is men and women and political leaders who are willing to take God and the Lord Jesus Christ and go public. This is not a day for secret agent Christians. This is not a day for spiritual CIA representatives. This is not a day for covert operatives. Everybody else is coming out the closet. You might as well come out too. God of the Bible, who creates humans, who made families, who established churches, and who built governments. That God. And to go public and let it be known, this is where I stand. And I stand not only for him, but the worldview that he gave. When our founders founded this great nation, yes, it was flawed, particularly with slavery. Yes, it was flawed with flawed people, but the premise was theologically accurate. And if we can return to the premise that life from womb to tomb has been created by God, and that how life is to be lived has been instructed by God, and how servants are to serve has been given by God, and how citizens ought to respond has been given by God, and how families are to function, how men are to be men, how women are to be women, how parents are to be parents, how children are to be children. All of that has been prescribed by God. Therefore, in the name of that God and those principles, we are now living our lives in this community. If you will break huddle and go public, you will begin to see the transformation, the improvement of the impeccable impact that you're going to make in your community. I thought you've got two choices. Either save them or take down the sign. But don't have a sign out there that gives me the impression that if I show up, you can make a difference. Don't have a sign out there that gives me the impression that when things are bleeding and falling apart, you can turn it around. Your sign is deceitful because you're declaring something that when I show up, you can't pull off. So either do what your sign says or stop making a mockery of the declaration of your sign. So as you pray and in this prayer breakfast, you only have 10 choices. You go back out to Fresno and Clovis and you begin healing lives and healing communities and making a difference because they are gushing with blood. They are bleeding in their lives, bleeding in their homes, bleeding in our communities and our nation. Our nation is falling apart. So you either perform what God has declared you to perform or you take down that sign. But don't give the impression that this prayer meeting makes a difference. Don't give the impression that we're going to turn things around in the name of God. Don't wear a sign. I belong to God and name the name of Jesus Christ. But when the broken world shows up, you don't practice anymore. It's time now for men and women to go public in the name of God. And that's why you come to prayer.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Fresno Clovis Prayer Breakfast, featuring Dr. Tony Evans. It was recorded on February 19, 2019. For more information or to learn about future events and speakers, visit FresnoClovisPrayerBreakfast.com.